I've been doing for the last year, together with Jurjen Koksma, who is now at Utrecht University. And I'm affiliated to the University of Iceland. So, what I will tell you today, well, the goals of my presentation today is to present to you Feynman diagrams, but not with Feynman propagators, but with causal propagators. And what exactly I mean with causal, I will explain you in a minute. But in short, it's that there are no that there's no traveling of disturbances outside of the light cone. And the other aspect of my talk, which will be mostly the second part, is about localization. So about position operators and about the ability to localize a particle in principle, which has been a problem historically. So what's the motivation behind my work? So the motivation was that causality is an important principle in physics in general. And this I have a background in causal dynamical triangulations. And there, a causal foliation seems to be very important in regularizing the path integral over four-dimensional spacetimes. Without such a foliation, you will get a degenerate sum over the geometries. This has been tried before. So there is Euclidean dynamical triangulations, and people have done this. And this wasn't coming out to be a, this was not giving a semi-classical limit. And with this foliation, you could get a semi-classical limit out. So this is an example where causality is really important. Another example where causality is really important is the is in field theory in general. And you can see this from the in-in formalism to quantum field theory, as opposed to the standard in-out formalism to quantum field theory. Well, what's the difference? In in-out quantum field theory, you compute scattering amplitudes, and you give the field configuration at some initial time, and you give the field configuration at some final time. In the in-in formalism, you compute the correlation functions directly by giving the field and its momentum at some initial time. So you do not in advance specify final data. And in this formalism, it is clear that you will get a causal effective action. And this is not clear in the out formalism. And in fact, the standard in-out effective action, so if you compute loop effects to the effective action, it's even for real scalar fields, for example, it'll be complex. So it cannot be the correct effective action. And therefore, it's not causal. Or therefore, well, there's no reason why, but it's also not causal. Just not the correct effective action. But the in-in formalism does give you the correct effective action. So the goal of what I'm doing is now to get a causal version of the in-out formalism. So where you specify in conditions and out conditions, and where you get, as in the in-in formalism, causal and real effective action also for real fields. So I will talk about quantum field theory in a slightly different way as you're used to, because normally quantum field theory is explained as number one on the slide here, as an infinite number of oscillators. So each point of the field is considered to be a quantum degree of freedom. And this is how you quantize the field, the quantize the system. But there's another way and you can view quantum field theory. And this is used in scattering theory. Namely, in scattering theory, you need to compute concrete amplitudes for processes, and there you need a probabilistic concept. And there you really use the concept as you do in usual quantum mechanics. So once you include wave packet states in quantum field theory, you have a wave function as in standard quantum mechanics. And this is the point of view I will basically start from. So I will take the scattering point of view where you have single particle wave functions, and I will explain to you a little bit about what they are in regular quantum field theory. So how can I view the Klein-Gordon field as a quantum equation? Because I said to you, well, I'm going to talk about wave functions. Well, these wave functions, they turn out to be positive frequency solutions of the Klein-Gordon equation. So of the, for example, also for real Klein-Gordon equations, if I wanted to,
I'm trying to understand the distinction you made. Is it basically the distinction between what people call first quantization and second quantization?
Sort of, yes. This is basically the distinction. In second quantization, you really view the system as an infinite number of oscillators, and the step of quantization is then really making operators out of the fields. And in first quantization, you would discuss the field directly as a quantum wave function. But these are mutual, you can use them both, right? They're not mutually exclusive. I mean, but the scattering theory, where the probabilistic point of view comes from, is really this first quantized point of view. So now I will explain quantum field theory from the first quantized point of view.
This first quantized point of view, though, is only for single particles, right? That's...
No. I mean, you can build a Fock space from these single particle states to get multi-particle states. So there's no restriction to single particle states. But I will talk about single particle states for the most, because for my purposes, it's not important to have them the Fock space there.
Are you going to address the standard objection, which, I mean, like, you know, as Tim showed, they say, well, we can't use a wave function for some reason that I can't remember at the moment.
Yes.
But, I mean, are you going to talk about that? And
exactly.
Why that's wrong? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, the Peskin, talking about Peskin Schroeder, if you take Peskin Schroeder, you'll read, one of the main objections is, two relativistic quantum mechanics. So that's basically this point of view, is that the propagation of the wave function is not causal. So, and this is indeed the case, but what they then don't say is that this feature is exactly there in quantum field theory. So if you take expectation values, you will explicitly get these positive frequency wave functions there, and you use them still. So this is some thing that's usually not highlighted in the textbook. So they say, once you do quantum field theory, this problem is solved. And this is solved in the sense of Feynman and Strickler-Bear. But I will not go into these details a little bit, but this problem of causality, that is precisely the point I'm going to address in this talk. So that explicit objection by Peskin and Schroeder, this I'm going to address and cure. So how can I view the Klein-Gordon field as a wave function? Well, I'm starting from the classical dispersion relation for a free particle, which is a p squared plus m squared. Well, and then I promote the momentum to an operator, which gives me this equation here. And this exactly is the Klein-Gordon equation, which is this guy here, so which does have the h bar in there. Most often, if you take your high energy books, you put h bar into one, and you don't realize that there's actually an h bar in the Klein-Gordon equation, but there actually is. And so it works exactly as you would do as in standard non-relativistic quantum mechanics.
But there's a problem, because the field phi is real. It's not a wave function. So I cannot square it like I usually do in quantum mechanics to get probability densities. So the standard point of view in quantum field theory, well, this is not explained to you in textbooks like this, but the operators actually project for you down to positive frequency solutions. So I have a complete non-operator valued real Klein-Gordon field here, and it consists of positive frequency and negative frequency solutions separately. And then the interpretation that you usually have in quantum field theory is that, in this is scattering first quantized interpretation, is that the wave function, the relativistic wave function, is precisely this positive frequency solution, which is a part of the real Klein-Gordon fields. Well, and this exactly satisfies a Schrodinger equation. As you would expect it to be. So the positive frequency solution satisfies the square root form of the Schrödinger equation. And if you expand this, you precisely get here the regular Schrödinger equation. So it really acts like a wave function, this positive frequency solution of the Klein-Gödel field. And this is the object you use in scattering theory to produce probabilities.
Saying there's the Schrödinger equation plus a bunch of other corrections, or are you saying that it's exactly the Schrödinger equation?
Well, it's a semantics at this point, right? I would call this a Schrödinger equation too. So and so the one with the square root here. So I have a ddt, and here I have a Hamiltonian. So I have an h-bar ddt Hamiltonian working on the phi. So in essence, I call this a Schrödinger equation.
Okay.
And but it's of course the
number
of the Schrödinger plus corrections. Okay, and in momentum space it looks like this.
And in momentum space here you can really see the positive frequency part. There's this theta of k0 that appears in multiple places in quantum field theory. You see it all the time, this theta of k0. And the objective, sort of the objective here is that to remove this theta k0, basically, so to see the whole Klein-Gordon field as a wave function. So how do you do it in standard quantum field theory? How do you define this probability density? Well, it is complex, so I could say I can take phi plus times phi plus star, but if I do Lorentz invariant normalization, there is this anti-symmetric double-sided derivative. It's a standard derivative, so if you haven't seen it before, it's an anti-symmetric derivative. So it first acts here and doesn't act there. And then with a minus sign, it acts here, and the other one isn't affected. So and this gives you a probability density, which is positive definite and normalized in a covariant manner. So here you can see why the ddt is there in the probability density, because a volume element here is actually Lorentz vector values. And so for something to be to be Lorentz covariant, this has to be also a Lorentz vector. So that you have a Lorentz scalar if you contract. So that's why this dt is there. But this is just a different normalization. This is a principle you can also do in the non-relativistic theory, but then there's no reason because you don't have Lorentz invariants. But this is just the standard. This is a standard formula. I haven't done anything. I've just done taken the standard scattering theory of formulas and just present them in position space, so as to make the connection with standard Schrödinger theory more prominent. Yeah, but, and that will get a minus sign here. Negative. So this I will go on. And so the point of view, the point is that in standard quantum field theory, you actually don't have any positive frequency states. So the you project all the negative frequencies out, basically. So there are no negative frequency wave functions. And the Feynman-Sickelberg interpretation is precisely that what would be negative frequency wave functions, you take them from the cats to the bras, so that there actually are no real wave functions. There are no real negative frequency wave functions, but you just transform them to the complex conjugate wave functions, basically. So you eliminate the negative frequency wave functions in standard quantum field theory.
What you really do is you define a four-vector quantity.
Yeah.
So the positive ones are associated with creation, and the negatives are annihilation.
Exactly.
So you have number minus.
Exactly.
Random particles, right?
Exactly. Exactly. This is just the.
But this you've only included the positive. There you include both positive and negative.
No, you don't. No. This is the point. In standard quantum field theory, you don't do that. So the creation operator creates a positive frequency state. And the annihilation operator, in a sense, creates a ket or a bra, so a positive frequency bra.
So if you take the number operator and you Fourier transform it to position space, this is exactly what you get. So you do not get something that also has the negative frequency modes in there. So this is the Fourier transform of the number operator, in a sense. So if you sandwich it between two states and then do a Fourier transform, this is the position space expression you get, and not with the negative frequency modes there. This is precisely the point I wish to make here. Yeah, John.
Quantization, you've overcome the problem of positivity of charge, because you're creating annihilation, emission absorption.
Yeah, yeah, but my point is this is just equivalent to second quantization. So I could write this as an expectation value of operator valued quantities. So that's exactly what I was saying to Andrew. If I take the number operator and I sandwich it between two states, and then Fourier transform to position space, then this is exactly what you get. So this is the expectation value of a single particle state of the number operator presented in position space.
So in other words, second quantization, you write phi of x in terms of an annihilation equation operator. What is e to the I p of x, you have e to the minus I p of I. Then you form a Hamiltonian, divide the Hamiltonian summation, everything comes out right.
Yeah, sure. But this is standard quantum field theory. So I'm just writing this, so these are the expectation values of standard quantum field theory operators. So I just present these, I take the expectation values and do the Fourier transform to position space. So I'm not doing anything new, that's coming later. That's exactly it.
Okay. Just to clarify, this is for a single particle.
This is for a single particle. Definitely.
That's why when you say that this is a Fourier transform of the number operator, and yet it's always equal to 1, that makes sense because you want one particle.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's the point. Yeah. Exactly. Otherwise, I would get that. Let's see.
When did the fields become complex?
When I projected to positive frequency modes. So this is the point of the creation and annihilation operator. So even for real fields, I have complex objects because I project the negative frequencies out.
Yeah.
This is how I get these wave function like objects.
Okay.
And this is not the original interpretation how people got into quantum mechanics, because then they were really thinking about complex fields as wave functions, not about real fields as wave functions. And then there was this problem that you had a natural integral, namely the integral over the charge current, which was not positive definite. So if I have a general complex field, there should be the star here. This is the charge current. And this is not positive definite, so this is not valid as a probability density. And this used to be the problem in interpreting just non-operator valued things as wave functions. And but what I explained to you now before, that was actually the quantum field theory solution to it. So I should not consider complex fields as wave functions, but positive frequency parts of real fields, they are the wave functions. So and then you get a positive definite integral, unlike this charge I define here. Yes.
True that the integrand is not necessarily positive definite.
No, it is. So this object I showed you is necessarily positive.
P of x for every x.
Yes, P of x is for every x positive. You can show this.
Yes.
So this is positive definite. That's what I showed. You can just check it. But it's really positive definite, and it should be because there is a number operator in quantum field theory, right? And in this sense, you can really understand it as a number operator. So it's.
But that would be a local number operator. I mean, there's no reason the global number operator should be positive, but there's no need why the local one.
There's no need. No, it is in principle no need, but it is. So if you integrate the number density operator, then the number density operator itself is positive definite, and it will integrate to 1. So, yes.
Historically, reason that Pauli, Heisenberg, Wigner, Jordan produced sector quantization is precisely because of this problem of the prime Jordan.
Exactly. And that's why I'm alluding to this point here. This is the original problem why people developed second quantization. And but now I'm presenting it back from a sort of a modern point of view, where I just take the expectation values of second quantized quantities, and you see it's just projecting to positive frequency the sector. And this is so this is essentially how second quantization solves this problem. So it's not the fact that you promote to operators. It's the fact that you that the operators for you project to positive frequency modes, and thereby making this integral positive definite.
So you exclude all negative energy.
You exclude all negative energy. Exactly, that's the point. That's the point of second quantization, how you can produce probabilities and... that's why you can do scattering, produce scattering probabilities.
P of x is actually independent of time.
P of x is independent of time. No, it isn't, because in general this this is evaluated equal time, but the P of x in general is can be dependent on time.
Isn't the time difference just due to the I omega t?
No, not in general. This is for arbitrary wave packets. I mean, this is just like in standard quantum mechanics. If I plot the probability distribution of a wave packet, it evolves in time. Right? If I have a Gaussian wave packet, it evolves in time.
It's exactly as in as it is. These are four axes, right? So, sorry, maybe that's the confusion.
So these are four
axes. So this is t comma x vector. No, these are not the field operators. These are solutions to the Klein-Gordon field. So solutions to the Klein-Gordon equation are wave packets. So the point is that in standard quantum field theory, the field operators normally don't have wave packets. But these are not but these guys are solutions to the Klein-Gordon equations. So they are wave packets. Okay. So this is so it's not so the original problem. Like John pointed out, was exactly the fact that the charge could not be interpreted as a probability density. And this was to be a problem. But in fact, in quantum field theory, what you do is you project down to these positive frequency modes. So you have a positive definite probability density here, and you have a charge that is zero, and this charge is zero for real fields, because there is this plus sign here. So the negative frequencies are, in principle, there if you just compute the charge current. But since you can use some trivial identities for the real field, this row is zero. And here you see immediately that is zero because of antisymmetry of this derivative. But I explicitly show you this formula because now I'm going to go to a new way of representing this. So far, yeah, Andy.
So isn't that this additional problem? If you start with all frequency modes, so a wave function that's just a superposition of a bunch of positive frequency modes, can't you construct realistic potentials such that if you evolve the wave function in time, you get negative frequency modes popping out? Isn't that part of the other problem? I mean, that was another reason why they had to...
Yeah, that was the Klein paradox, what you're alluding to.
Yeah,
yeah, and this is somehow solved in quantum field theory by, but this is a little bit more tricky how it's solved. This is exactly how you can understand negative frequency modes as positive frequency modes traveling backward in time. And so you have absorption and you have creation of particles, and this is how you can talk about it. But I find this solution a little bit... It's not so easy to translate in this language, how quantum field theory solves this. Actually, this is a problem I still want to do in the formalism here. So I'm going to a formalism where you do have these negative frequency modes there, and then I want to analyze how this Klein paradox works. I'm sorry I cannot have a very nice. Discussion of this, yes.
Since you raised it, I think the same thing will happen in curved space-time, In a sense, it's a special case of what you're saying.
Yeah. Your spacetimes, you get this problem. And there are these people in cosmology have discussed this. There's a problem somehow to project to positive frequency modes only because it's sometimes hard in curved spacetime to actually separate. It doesn't make any sense. So standard creation annihilation pictures are troublesome if you go into curved spaces because you don't know what the positive and negative frequency sectors are. I mean, how to divide them. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be. I'm going to eliminate the positive this projection to positive frequency solution. So this may be also helping cosmological applications.
Elusive Fourier transform curved space time.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what you use to go to positive frequency modes. Exactly, because you need a Fourier transform to do it. Okay, so my objection to the standard picture where you have only these positive frequency modes is that you have non-positive propagation because the positive frequency modes here satisfy a propagation law. So this type of law I call a propagation law. And this is familiar from quantum mechanics, right? But again, there's in quantum mechanics, there's no derivative here, but there's just the kernel times the wave function psi here in usual quantum mechanics.
But to make everything a Lorentz covariant, this derivative has to be there. Okay, so fine. But this positive frequency Whiteman function, this is here. This is non-causal, and this is related to the Feynman propagator in standard quantum field theory. So the Feynman propagator, if you do perturbation theory, it's going to be time-ordered. So the time-ordered positive frequency Whiteman function, that is the Feynman propagator. So, and that is non-causal. So it has correlations outside of the light cone. So if I start with a localized perturbation, it will disperse outside of the light cone. Well, and this is sort of strange. And this is exactly what Peskin and Schroeder complained about, why you shouldn't have it. And the propagation for the field itself, though, is with the causal. Well, this is a bit of a misnomer, perhaps, but it's the commutator propagator. But it's also causal in the sense that it vanishes outside of the light cone. So presented in a picture, if I have the full field, I will have a small perturbation in the field here. It will disperse, so I have a Gaussian-like wave packet, but it's zero outside of the compact support here. it'll disperse, and it'll stay manifestly within the light cone because this commutator propagator is within the doesn't have any correlations outside of the light cone. So this is a picture I had in mind that would be nice. So why can't I do quantum field theory with this commutator propagator? Well, this is exactly what I will present to you, how you should do this. Namely, you should just rewrite the probability density. So I explained to you that this form of the probability density is just the standard quantum field theory probability density in position space. And now I just use the trivial identity in for real fields that the positive frequency, the complex conjugates of the positive frequency modes are just equivalent to the negative frequency modes. That's just a simple mathematical identity. So I can go from here to here. I just have rewritten. And remember I presented to you the charge currents. The charge currents had a plus sign here. So the charge current gave you not a positive definite norm, so that's why it was or neglected as a quantum field theory norm or a quantum mechanical norm in the beginning. But you can just use a similar one, but just with a minus sign here. And it's exactly the same as the standard quantum field theory norm by this identity. So it's just a rewriting. I'm in fact doing nothing here. I'm just rewriting. I do a further rewriting. Well, you can actually show that this formula here is equivalent to this formula here, where this is the Hadamard propagator. And this the Hadamard propagator now takes on the role of making a probability density out of a real wave function. So here I only had positive frequency and negative frequency modes there, which are propagated by these Whiteman functions that were not causal. But if I rewrite it like this, then I can first compute the time evolution of the field phi, the whole field phi, propagate it in time in a causal manner, and then in the end make a probability out of it with the Hadamard propagator. So the time evolution of the probability density will be causal. So, and this also shows that the probability density in standard quantum field theory is causal. So if I have an initial field disturbance, well, it will propagate outside of the light cone. But once I compute the probability density, it will be within the light cone. And there is some sort of cancellation going on from the complex conjugate modes, which makes it causal. But you don't see it in the standard formalism. And here I've just rewritten it in a way how you can see it. Because here I rewrite the probability density in the form of the real fields themselves. So we know that the real fields themselves propagate in a causal manner by the commutator propagator. Well, you can condense this formula even more into this form, where it is field phi h. I call it is the Hilbert transform in time in the time variable of the field phi. But you can just use the Fourier decomposition here. This is an operation which makes that you can reproduce this formula here. So if you just write this in terms of phi pluses and phi minuses and these phi h, write it like that, then you can go from here to there. As simple as that. But this has manifestly the field phi itself in it. So I can do the time evolution of that. So now the field phi itself is the wave function.
Not just on phi, it's dependent on plus or minus
parts,
right?
Yeah, the phi itself is also dependent on plus or minus parts.
Right? If all you have is phi, then... Okay.
Well, it's not all you have, right? Because I have this phi h here. So
you wrote it there. I mean, I don't know where you got it. You got it in terms of phi plus and phi minus, but where do those come from?
Well, you can either get them from the Fourier transform, or you can get them from the Hilbert transform. So this is a
this is a
transform used in complex analysis, and for me it precisely does this. So it shifts the signal by 90 degrees, so by 180 degrees.
Okay.
But that's what it does for you. But yes.
Going back to the wave packet stuff, how much can you localize the wave packet in time?
In time. There is no, I have not studied the localization of the wave packets in time. But
because the positive frequency constraint would not allow arbitrary localization.
No, not in time, but just in space. But you usually don't discuss localization in time, right? They're going in quantum field or quantum mechanics. Localization is about how well you can localize a wave packet in space. And it's just, it has a time evolution in time, right? If I have initial well-localized wave packet, which is, for example, a Gaussian wave packet, but it's well-localized, and it's not localized in time at all, because it just evolves, right? It spreads out. So it's not localized. The only objects that are localized in time are solitons, right? Instantons.
No, this is not correct. In quantum optics, they talk about time localization all the time. But I mean, there's...
Sure. You can have signals that are localized in time, but this is not the standard localization concept you talk about in quantum mechanics. Sure, you can squeeze the signals, make them very short, and localize them in time. Definitely. But this is not the type of localization you typically talk about in quantum mechanics. But this is perhaps going...
The short answer is you're talking about spatial localization.
Spatial localization, yes. Spatial localization.
The main point of this slide here is that I'm just rewriting the standard probability density of quantum field theory to a form where it contains the field phi itself. So I'm going to compute the field, the time evolution of the field phi, hence making the theory causal.
What is that propagator exactly?
The Hadamard propagator. Let's see, it's, let me write it. well, even, no, let me say it in the word. It's just the delta k squared plus m squared. It's delta h x minus x prime equals integral d 4 k 2 pi 3 delta k squared plus m squared e to the minus I k x minus x prime. This is the Hadamard propagator.
Okay.
And the commutator propagator is the one with an epsilon of k0 here. So let me write it too.
This is not a propagator, is it? I mean, it's not a Green's function.
It's not a Green's
function.
It's a
solution
of
the wave.
Yes. So, but this is so it's not a Green's function, but you can call it a propagator if you'd like. Yeah. Okay. So, well, in, to make it a little bit more natural that these negative frequency modes are actually there is if you look at the energy. The energy is just the integral over the energy momentum tensor, of the zero component of the energy momentum tensor. And if you just do the Fourier transform of the standard energy momentum tensor of scalar field theory, you get this expression. So it is delta k squared plus m squared, so the on-shell momentum delta constraint, with the k zero, with absolute value signs here. So that means that negative frequency is not equivalent to negative energy. And this was one of the other original misconceptions that people had when they started to do this relativistic quantum mechanics, and why you got these negative results, is because they identified the frequency with the energy. But they didn't have the energy momentum tensor then of a real scalar field, so they didn't think that way. But now we have this quantum field theory picture where we know that the energy momentum tensor is the right way of discussing energies of particles. There you see this absolute value sign around the frequency. And as I showed on the slide here before, then you can see this is just it has the form of an expectation value where there is no theta of k0. So there's no restriction to positive frequency modes. So the natural norm is just this. And that in the position space precisely corresponds to my rewritten version I showed you before. So just losing the theta of k0 makes also the Fourier transform of the energy momentum tensor read very naturally as a quantum mechanical expectation value. Sure. Well, it's positive definite, right? It has this absolute value sign. And this is just a regular non-operator valued energy momentum tensor, the standard energy momentum tensor. I've done nothing different. I've just written the non-operator valued energy momentum tensor, and I just massaged a little bit in Fourier space and got this. So I haven't done anything. So I just use this to argue that this probability density that I have written here with the minus sign here is perfectly natural because it corresponds exactly to this this norm here, which is natural because of the way I've written the energy.
Are we supposed to understand the expectation value of the energy?
Yes, exactly.
So sorry, but if you don't have localization in time, why do you worry about causality? Everything is in the forward light cone of some part, minus infinity.
No, but the point is that time evolution of disturbances will go outside of the light cone. So there are correlations outside of the light cone all the time. I mean, a wave packet at equal time is in a sense non-local, but it will not evolve in a non-causal manner.
And the point is, if you have positive frequency modes, it will evolve outside of the light cone. So it will not strictly stay within the light cone.
Yes.
So your wave packet has extension to t equal minus infinity. So outside the light cone is, no, inside the light cone. Everything is inside the light cone.
No, but my point is that it will not be inside of the light cone. So, I mean, if you go far back enough in time, everything will be inside of the light cone. But the point is that if I have a small disturbance of a positive frequency mode, it will be propagated by the Feynman propagator. And it was so in a very small, so an infinitesimal amount of time, it will have propagated infinitely far. So, and this is not what happens if you propagate with a causal propagator, with a commutator propagator. So a real field phi will not be propagated out the side of the light cone. So it will not have this property that after an infinitesimal time, it will be distributed over all of space. This, it will not have this property. And if you have a positive frequency mode that is propagated with a Feynman propagator, it will have this property. So at an after an infinitesimal time, it will be all over space. And with the causal propagator, you don't have this. So for real fields, you don't have this. So,
So, is your point of view that what you're doing is just is going to be exactly equivalent to quantum ordinary quantum
yes.
field theory, but a different,
most certainly.
A more useful way to think about it?
Yes, most certainly.
So, if you, I mean, I think the way to answer to ask your question is, what if you put a point source of some sort? Where would the effect of that source be felt? In ordinary, from the point of view of space, a space-time point source, right? The origin. Is that not this what?
Can you describe it in terms of a positive frequency?
Well, that's another question.
You can, but that's a point. This is what these positive frequency modes are using standard quantum field theory. And my point exactly is you should not restrict to these positive frequency modes. You should use the whole field itself. That's exactly the point.
I just want to, so if you put a point source of some sort,
yeah.
then, and we use the normal notion of localization that comes from quantum field theory, then that will not be felt outside the future light cone of that sort. No, it will not. So in other words, if you start with, say, a vacuum state or some common input state, and then you put a point source, a J of X, which is a kind of delta function, and then you ask, where can you detect that source was there? It's only within the future.
And where can you measure it?
Where can you measure it, for example? It's only within the future.
Yeah, yeah. So
that I assume will be the same here.
Yeah, that will be the same.
So the only thing I want to ask is, but what that source does is, and here's where second quantization comes in, it doesn't just, you know, disturb that one particle, it creates particle. It'll change the particle number. Now, I guess the same will be true for you.
Yeah, sure. This will be exactly the same. But the point is that, here you will see so it's true that if you do measurable things, so like the probability density I showed you, it is perfectly causal. So the probability density of finding a particle somewhere will be within the light cone. But just the thing is that the positive frequency wave functions are outside of the light cone. But once you discuss measurable things, it will definitely be within the light cone. Also in standard quantum field theory. But just the point of this exercise is to show manifestly why is that
in
so?
In a kind of particle language, as opposed to a quantum field operator language.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the operator language, it's manifest. It's self-evident that the effect is within the light cone.
But
you're trying to make it. No, I think it is. That's another.
The reason is that the local fields. Definition of locality is that the commutator of x, phi of x and phi of y vanishes in space-like separation.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
The Feynman causal has to be causal.
Yeah, exactly, but this is exactly the commutator propagator, and this doesn't appear in standard perturbation theory. But it is the relevant propagator for if you want to do measurements and things like this. And that is exactly what I mean. So this commutator propagator, that was exactly... here. This is exactly the commutator propagator you're talking about, and that is causal. That is exactly causal. So I'm formulating a way of doing quantum field theory in terms of this causal commutator propagator. So the little joke here that's going around is Y Psi, that's the program of the teaching program here, right? Well, my answer would be then, because Psi squared gives you a probability density. And but I'm replacing that in a sense with a probability density in terms of phi. So I have phi as a wave function. So I have a real valued wave function instead of the standard complex valued wave function, which propagates in a causal manner. So it has many manifestly causal propagators. So now let's go to interacting field theory.
Wait, are you going to answer that?
So
you asked a question, said Wi-Fi, or is that a joke?
Yeah, that's a little
that's
bit of
a joke.
The Wi-Fi is the, or Wi-Psi. Wi-Psi here is because it gives the probability density to measure a particle somewhere.
Right.
So here, Wi-Fi, because I say phi gives the probability density of giving a particle, or measuring a particle somewhere, in this sense. So the formula under the previous picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I
get what you're saying, but what I all right, I'll let you.
But since you put that phi h or whatever it was called, that's a non-local function of phi, of course.
Yeah, like you do in usually in Fourier transforms. So as in yes.
But it means that this density is not a local expression in terms of phi.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at earlier. The this Hilbert transform,
yeah.
Phi, it's treating phi plus and phi minus differently. You're not acting linearly on the combination phi plus.
No, definitely. Sure.
But then, okay.
But you can also do it with this Hadamard propagator, right? So with this Hadamard propagator, you have only phi's, and then you can use the equal time Hadamard propagator to produce the probability. So this is another point of view you can take. It's whatever you prefer. And to remove one of these integrations, you produce this formula here. But you can also take this Hadamard point of view. Okay, so I've rewritten the probability density in terms of the real field phi. And now I want to do Feynman diagrams, Feynman-like diagrams. So how do I do this? I do. I want to do classical Feynman diagrams. So I want to do, produce tree diagrams. So how is this a nice way to do it? Well, I use the Liouville equations. I pick a Hamiltonian framework, and I do a phi to the third theory. So simple standard phi to the third theory, and I'm going to use this to do perturbation theory. Well, how do we do this? I use the operator form of the Poisson bracket, namely through the Liouvillean operator. So I can write the standard Liouville equation, which I showed you on the previous slide, as in terms of the Schrödinger-like equation. Right? This looks like a Schrödinger equation, and this is the Liouvillean operator. But I still denote it by an H hat because it really acts like a Hamiltonian operator. And it has the advantage that I can now exponentiate the solution. And actually, I can set up an interaction picture exactly as you do in standard quantum field theory in the operator formalism, because I can exponentiate things like this. So I just do a perturbative expansion in the interaction picture using this Liouvillean operator.
No.
They're still.
And these are just seen. You're just solving.
I'm just solving the nonlinear
classical nonlinear equation.
Exactly. I'm just
so
solving
how,
the classical.
So how can you have this? What looks like a linear operator giving?
Yeah, this is just a way of writing the Poisson bracket here.
The next line.
This is I just write the Liouvillean. Write this as an operator equation using this Liouvillean. So I just take out, so here the Poisson bracket itself, so if I H phi has got a phi here and a phi there, and this precisely is the Poisson bracket of the Hamiltonian with a phi. So But you can write this Poisson bracket as linear.
The minus I h hat t is sort of valuing.
Well, you just apply h twice.
You just mean
sort of, line.
You just mean successive applications of this.
Because h is a linear differential.
It's not linear in that sense.
Yeah, so the successive action of these operators will produce for you the time evolution of the field. So it's just a way of writing the Poisson brackets.
Well, I think the notation strongly suggests that h hat is a linear.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It is.
But it depends.
Why is it not?
Depends on phi, no?
Yeah, it depends on phi, but what do you mean with linear in this sense? Is it because linear derivatives?
Well, if you apply it to phi 1 plus phi 2, do we get the sum of applying it to phi 1 and applying it to phi 2?
Yes, but it's like a Poisson bracket. So a standard Poisson bracket, I'm just rewriting the Poisson bracket, I'm doing nothing more. I'm just writing the standard Liouville equation and I write it in operator form such that I can exponentiate it and I can just do...
I don't understand, but I'll drop it.
Okay. So when I do this, and so I can do a standard interaction picture, so I won't go into details because it will take a little bit too much time. But I can compute the first order corrections, and first order corrections, so in the coupling constant, they look something like this. So I have first order correction to the field phi, which is a time-ordered commutator in the sense of Poisson bracket. So I think it's the Poisson bracket of the interaction Hamiltonian, so the phi to the third Hamiltonian, with the initial field phi. And the second order correction is just more nested Poisson brackets, time order. Yeah, exactly. That's what it does. This is how you define this H operator. So now I had these Poisson brackets here. They are unequal time Poisson brackets, and this is something you usually do not encounter.
IPH.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But I had here the Poisson brackets, right? I wrote here the Liouville equation. Dt phi is the Poisson bracket of h comma phi, which is this form. And then I just take the phi out, and I make this into an operator. I take the phi out of here, so I put it here, and I call this thing an operator. And that's this Liouvillean operator.
Which confused everybody is the notation on the next line, the phi of the exponential I h at t phi of 0, because this suggests that h is linear, which is not. So this is very confusing.
Yeah.
The next line explains what this means.
I use this notation because I can exponentiate, right? This is why I use this notation. So yeah, I admit it's slightly confusing, but it's precisely such that I can exponentiate. Otherwise, I cannot. And this will be these will be the corrections to my field, the coupling constant corrections. So I had some Poisson brackets in there, and some unequal time Poisson brackets. So how do I compute unequal time Poisson brackets? You can get them from the propagation law. If I have here the field phi and I propagate it with the commutator, I can take the functional derivatives that I do in the Poisson brackets of these quantities. So I write it, so I just write it out. I can take functional derivatives with respect to pi and with respect to phi at some initial time. And then I can compute these non-equal time commutator functions right here. But if you just work this out, you can see that you will produce exactly a composition law for these commutator propagators. Because you will see that these derivatives give either the commutator or the time evolution of the or the time derivative of the commutator. And you will produce this combination, and then you use the composition law, and you exactly get that the non-equal time Poisson brackets of the fields phi will give for you the commutator function. So as the quantum field theory is the commutator function. Yes?
is not for the free theory?
Sorry?
The delta commutator, isn't that for the free theory without the phi q?
This is for the free theory, yes, exactly. But these are what you use in perturbation theory, right? You use for the time dilution, you use the free theory. And then you solve free propagators together. So the precisely good point. And these massive commutators here, then using these unequal time Poisson brackets here, exactly give you three diagrams which do not have finite propagators, but they have these time-ordered commutator propagators. So which I will denote by delta W, the Wheeler propagator.
So standard three diagrams. And the Wheeler propagator itself, so it's either the time-ordered commutator, or you can view it as the half-advanced, half-retarded propagator, and it's also the real part of the Feynman propagator. It's whatever you prefer. And this Wheeler propagator appears in this expansion because it is the Green's function for a real scalar field. So the Feynman propagator is not the Green's function for a real scalar field, as you might read in textbooks sometimes, because the Feynman propagator is complex. So how can it, this complex propagator be the proper Green's function for a real field? Well, it's not. You should use the real part of the Feynman propagator, the Wheeler propagator. And it's not so strange that the Feynman propagator is used as a Green's function in usual field theory, because it is the Green's function of the positive frequency modes. And that's why it's complex. So then there's no problem. But for the real scalar field, the Wheeler propagator is the symmetric Green's function one should use. So now I will. I'm running a little bit out of time. I have the second part of my talk has to be rushed a bit. Well, I wanted to discuss a simple single particle example. So a single wave function shows you the wave packet characteristics in quantum field theory, and you can solve them. And so it's a simple finite epsilon wave packet, and the time evolution can be simply solved, and the result is this. And at t is zero, it has the form of Cauchy-Lorentz or Bright-Wigner function, and this form is familiar from spectral lines. So the width of spectral lines is typically given by a Lorentz distribution, or a Cauchy-Lorentz distribution, or Bright-Wigner function, whatever you like. And this is just a wave packet that that you can write down. You can solve the time evolution of, and which is a normalized, simple normalized wave packet that has the same interpretation as in standard quantum mechanics, but it is relativistic. And so it looks like a Gaussian here, not quite. It's got wider tails, and the time evolution of it is like this. So I'm plotting here the wave function in my language, right? Because this is the real field phi, so I can plot the wave function. Something you cannot do usually because the wave function is complex. So this is sort of a cute thing. So it's here I plot the wave function. And the time evolution of the probability density is just that it spreads out, and but it dims, so you see the scales going up. So it's just a spreading Gaussian-type wave packet, but a relativistic one. That's the point. The relativistic wave function that can, in principle, be localized. That's the point. So I can localize the relativistic particle as well as I like, but just by tuning this parameter epsilon. So if I take this epsilon to be infinitesimally small, it will just get infinitely peaked, meaning that it's very localized. So how can I say that it's localized? How can I compute this? Well, I can compute the width of this wave packet, as in standard quantum mechanics. Namely, by I just told you, well, this is my probability density, so I'm going to compute expectation values by just plugging in positions. So I do the position itself, or the position squared, and I can compute then the width of this wave packet. And this wave packet I showed you, it's exactly epsilon. And if I take epsilon to zero, I can localize the particle exactly. So, and this is one of these textbook problems that people have with relativistic particles, that you cannot localize relativistic particles infinitely, because somehow you have particle production and things like that. But my point is that indeed you have those problems like, of particle production, but they are perturbative effects. So if the coupling constant is small, there is in principle no problem with the localization of relativistic particles. So definitely for finite coupling constant there will be pair production and this sort of stuff. But there's nothing wrong if I have if I have a free theory. But it will cost me an infinite amount of energy, of course, to localize the particle infinitely in an infinitely small patch of the space. So in this I can just compute. I can just calculate the energy given by the energy momentum tensor, and I will get 1 over epsilon. So the particle can be infinitely localized at the cost of expending an infinite amount of energy. So then the, why was this a problem for many people, that there was this localization of particles? Well, one of the problems was the Newton-Wigner position operator. I have a different position operator, namely the a bilinear operator. And so I just do a Fourier transform of x average, and I just represent it by a differential operator. And the problem of the standard non-relativistic type operator is that it's not Hermitian, because there is this delta function here. So if I take a Hermitian conjugate, I will hit this delta function. I will get some strange contributions. So how can I make a Hermitian operator? By making a bilinear operator, meaning that it acts on both sides. And this is anti-symmetric and purely imaginary. Thus, it is manifestly Hermitian without having to do partial integrations. So it's a manifestly Hermitian position operator in momentum space. And you can generalize this easily to higher operators, so to x squared position operators. And you have here a real and symmetric position operator. So I can... I can use this operator as an Hermitian operator to define x squared average.
Do you really mean that the two lines are the same? Because on the left side it seems like you have exactly the same expression, right? Or am I always? You're saying the first line corresponds to the old way of doing it, and the second line corresponds to a new way.
No. It's exactly the same in principle. But the problem is that it's really the same. But the thing is that this way of doing it, so there's an ambiguity of representing this operator in momentum space. But the first way of doing it, so the standard non-relativistic way of doing it, will not produce for you a Hermitian operator.
Wait a second. What he's asking, I think, is if you take the top mathematical line at the last integral there,
yes,
is that equal to that same integral directly below? Is that a strict mathematical equality?
No. This is an equality that holds, right?
I understand that.
So this is, this might not be there's some boundary terms that might be different.
Yeah, but the left-hand side are exactly the same.
Left-hand side.
Yeah. So the point is that there's a non-uniqueness of representing these operators. Maybe I'm wrong. I should say maybe they are exactly the same. But I don't think so. I think they are the same up to boundary terms, I would say.
Well, then one of those equal signs shouldn't be there and change your place.
Yeah, I think there's a requirement.
I don't think equal signs should be there. Both of them should be representing the length.
Of course, it's represented like that. I took an explicit representation here, right? Since I take this integral, I can put these.
Let's say you're dealing in claim with real fields phi.
Yeah.
So we could take them to be a compact spatial support, for example.
Yeah.
But then will it be exactly equal?
Yeah. So I don't know. I should say this. So I think they're only equal up to boundary terms. But
is it time-like infinity? Not bounded where?
Spatial.
Yeah. So if we take them as compact. Spatial support, how can you have boundary terms?
So yeah, if they fall off at infinity, they are equal.
And they are equal.
So that's what I mean. So if they fall, if the wave function fall off at infinity, they really are equal. Then they are really equal. This I know. Okay, so so this is not the this would be the guess that you would do a la normal quantum mechanics. And so I would take this one because this is an emission operator. But this is not the use the standards or standard between quotation marks because people have problem with this, the Newton called the Newton-Wigner operator, which is not this bilinear operator way of making a Hermitian, but taking the Hermitian parts of the regular would be non-relativistic type operator. So this is the Newton-Wigner operator, and this is, it's slightly complicated because you hit this this delta function one. If you write out this delta function, you will get a 1 over omega k terms, and it looks sort of non-local. It looks sort of a non-local contribution to this Newton-Wigner operator, and this that has presented well. It's got 400 citations, over 400 citations this paper. And it's full of well, misconception that there is some sort of there's some sort of non-locality, fundamental non-locality, in measuring the position somehow. And one of the reasons is that the eigenstates of these Newton-Wigner operators, they are not localized states. So they call this Newton-Wigner called their paper localized in the title is localized states. And the eigenstate of their operator, well, as you can see it here, for massless particles, it's just 1 over r to the 5 half. But there's a divergence here, so it's not even a real state in the sense that it's normalizable. So this led many people to say that, well, one cannot localize relativistic particles because these eigenstates of the Newton-Wigner operator are not localized. Well, I have shown you that you can just by a Fourier transform and representing in momentum space the position operator by this bilinear operator, you can just really interpret these standard type wave functions really as wave functions, and you can compute their width. You can compute their position, the width, so I can compute all the things I would like to do as in standard quantum mechanics. And they can be infinitely localized. All as in standard quantum mechanics.
I get the point you're making that it doesn't have the pathological blowing up that the Newton-Wigner one does, but down there, I mean, it's still not completely local. It's not perfectly speaking.
No, sure. It's in the limit. But of course, if I make epsilon infinitely small, so it tends to zero, then it will become very, very localized. But it's not infinitely localized,
okay.
Only in this limit.
Okay, hang on. So what I'm trying to get at is, it looks like you've drawn two functions, neither of which is strictly localized. So in what sense is the one below better?
Well, at first, it's a wave function, right? It's a proper wave function, so it's really normalizable. This is really not normalizable. I mean, it doesn't even hit.
Okay, so I agree that the bottom one is normalizable. In what sense is it more localizable than the top one?
There's no parameter here, for example, that tunes the width here. So there's no, we cannot make the width infinitesimally small.
Okay.
So this is just a regular Gaussian-like. But I didn't take a Gaussian because a Gaussian I cannot solve. This is also one of these very nice features. A Gaussian wave packet, you cannot solve this time evolution. This wave packet, you can solve this time evolution. So in this sense, it's a relativistic wave packet. So and one of the nice things about this bilinear operator is that it generates the Poincaré algebra in momentum space. So if I take this bilinear operator here, it really satisfies the Poincaré algebra as you usually have it represented in position space. If you take this Newton-Wigner operator, you will not satisfy this Poincaré algebra in this simple sense. So this is another feature that makes this operator much nicer than the, or much, it makes it easier to work with than this Newton-Wigner operator. So now I come to my conclusion. So I presented to you a form of rewriting the probability of standard quantum field theory in terms of real wave functions. such that I can do perturbation theory in terms of causal propagators, so not finite propagators, which have correlation size outside of the light cone, but using linear propagators, which are related to the commutator propagator, which are zero outside of the light cone. And I've shown you a linear position operator, which is more convenient than this Wigner operator.
And these wave functions show that you can, in principle, localize a relativistic particle without problems. And our concept of localization is, in that sense, perfectly analogous to standard quantum mechanics. And in interacting quantum field theory, of course, you will have pair creation and that sort of stuff as corrections. But to order zero in the coupling constant, it's just quantum mechanics. And, well, the outlook is, well, I want to do so loop corrections with causal propagators. And this is going to be equivalent to standard field theory. It might, for renormalization purposes, be more convenient because it doesn't contain the imaginary part of the Feynman propagator. So I might get better behavior under renormalization of these causal propagators. So this might be nice to investigate because so far I'm stuck with tree diagrams, so we want to do proper loop corrections. And I want to show these that it's causal, just like in the in-in formalism, but now in the in-out formalism. So thank you for your time.
So are there any more questions?
Yeah.
So this thing about fields propagating outside their light cone system, like the propagator usually falls off exponentially outside the light cone.
Yeah.
I mean, that should give you measurable effects.
Yeah, but the point is that it doesn't, because there's once you get to the probability density, it will be zero outside of the light cone. And my rewritten...
I mean, no, hold on. You can construct operators, a lot of operators, which are causal in the sense that they are zero at the light cone. But there should be operators, too, that actually do give you correlations outside of the light cone.
Just sure.
And then, so will you be able to reproduce those? It seems like using your formulas and getting rid of those entirely.
No, not at all. For time, I'm trying to disentangle the time evolution and the equal time correlations. So remember there was a Hadamard propagator, which is really non-causal, but you use it at equal time. So there's really equal time correlations, which are all over space. So only in the time propagation, there you have these causal propagators. So you don't throw away all the spatial correlations. Definitely not. But the time evolution itself is causal. That's the point. Yes?
The Wheeler propagator that you wrote down, can you write that in terms of the commutator?
Yes, it's a time-ordered commutator. That was the first relation I...
It's just a half-retarded half-advanced.
So basically, you can get that class theory. So you would be able to construct endpoint functions just using that, right? So
it
could just cause theory just knowing that.
Sure, but there's still wave packet information, and there was this Hadamard propagator. So the time evolution is in terms of this commutator type function, this Wheeler propagator. But the wave packet, so the equal time wave packet information, that's sort of related to the Hadamard function. So basically, you disentangle the Feynman propagator into its real part, which governs the time evolution, and its imaginary part, which is the Hadamard propagator, which governs the equal time statistical information carried by your field. And this is also how it's used in the in-in formalism. People, this Hadamard propagator, the statistical propagator. And this is exactly the reason, because the equal time Hadamard propagator with wave packets really governs for you the statistical correlations in your field. But the time evolution, that's in this commutator propagator.
But this is just the positive part of the commutator, isn't it?
No. This is the Hadamard propagator, so it really contains positive and negative frequencies. And this is the commutator propagator, epsilon of k naught. So this would be, with the epsilon here, it would be the commutator propagator.
What does it mean?
It's one for positive frequencies and minus for negative frequencies.
Sine.
It's just a sine function, yeah, a sine function.
It's a heavy sine.
No, it's not a heavy sine.
No,
it's a sine function.
Yeah.
It's two heavy sides. Right? Sine function.
Yeah, sine function. Two heavy sides.
Yeah, two heavy sides, yes. Yes.
So in the end, you can reproduce the perturbation theory for the interacting theory. That's about the level.
Sure. The perturbation, but so far only tree diagram. So it's for me to show that the loops also work like this.
What
I haven't shown.
What's stopping you from going onto the loops?
Well, the formalism is slightly more tricky because they're all negative frequency states there. So it's a bit more tricky than I. With this formalism, so with the Poisson bracket formalism, it's very easy to get this perturbation theory. But you cannot get the loops easily with these Poisson brackets. So I cannot straight away extend this. And the standard formalism with the operators, then there are some sign issues and things like this. But we're working on this.
Do your tree diagrams include space-like propagation?
No.
It don't. So that's different.
Yes. There's no space like propagation.
So then how would you even have loops? I mean, I guess they'd have to be time-like.
Well, you have initial space-like correlations,
yeah,
and that are propagated in a causal manner,
yeah,
so they will just redistribute. So at every stage you will have space-like correlations, but they will be redistributed with causal propagators. So you will definitely have...
Okay, but just to be clear, if you have two particles coming in, in quantum field theory, you can say particles coming in, they exchange a virtual something and then go out.
Yeah.
You would not have that in your formalism.
Well, I would have virtual particles, but they would also be propagated in a causal fashion.
So they wouldn't go sideways.
Well, in quantum field theory,
Yeah, I know. You have them going like this and then propagate up. That's a different...
Yeah.
Take the same diagram and just move one
exactly
vertex up and one vertex down.
This is just a matter of the pictures,
so
right? This is not something physical.
Okay.
This is not something. This is just not how you can really read these diagrams. So I would write down the same diagrams, but I would have these causal propagators in them. So, yes.
In standard quantum field theory, you go into the interaction representation. You have free field. State vectors are time dependent. So then you write S matrix is equal to T. E to the I integral to 4x L and the Lagrangian interaction L. And then you expand it out exponential and you start doing wet contractions.
Yeah.
And that gives you all the Green's, it gives you all the final diagrams.
Yeah.
Now, it's not clear to me that with this Wheeler thing that you're going to get the loops correct.
Well, this is under investigation, so this is something that we'll have to...
The other question is, since I know how to do quantum field theory, it's now 80 years old, and I'm not happy with it because of point interactions, you get divergences. But why would I worry about doing this?
Well, this is just to bring causality in there. This is not to solve this problem of point interaction of divergences. This is not what we're talking about. This is something different. So this is the this is just to bring causality.
But the standard local quantum field theory is causal.
Yeah, but it doesn't use perturbation. In perturbation theory, there are not causal propagators. So the wave function is not propagated in a causal manner. So in the end, yes, everything is causal, but it's local. But that's something different than non-vanishing things outside of light.
But this is improving the theory from a... Okay, you're saying that both of you are agreeing that quantum field theory makes local predictions, in the sense that all observables are local. But what you're saying is that the ordinary way of doing quantum field theory uses these crazy non-local tools, and we get magic cancellation outside the light cone.
Exactly.
So let's try to simplify that and use manifestly causal tools to do the same thing.
Exactly.
So you're not trying to actually read. You're not trying to do a different theory that
replaces
quantum field theory. You're trying to do the same theory, but from a more intuitive standpoint.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's the same
theory. So that's
where
the advantage comes from.
Well, why did you say you get crazy non-local?
Because the Feynman propagator is, in some sense, non-local. If you have a very small field perturbation, it gets, after an infinitesimal time, propagated way outside of the light cone. And this is very strange. And this is exactly what you do not get for actual operators that you want to compute. Mm-hmm. And in this way, you already see it at the field level. And also, you see manifestly for the probability densities that it will not travel outside of the light cone. So the formula I showed you, this probability formula in terms of the positive frequencies, you cannot see it when you write it down that its propagation will stay within the light cone. But if you rewrite it with these negative frequencies there, just rewriting, nothing more, you will see that indeed it will propagate within the light cone. That's the advantage. So I'm doing nothing else, I'm just rewriting and to show that indeed probability densities manifestly and even wave functions travel within the light cone. But to make that manifest. So I'm just doing rewriting and not doing a new theory. Yes?
Do you think you could get a construction of interacting quantum field theories using this formula?
Yes. That's what we're working on at the moment. So to get the loops, so this is also interacting quantum field theory, but only three diagrams, right?
The thing that has to fail in known theories.
It should fail in about the same way as standard quantum field theory, but there might happen some cancellations, so it might improve renormalization. Because in the inning formalism, you know that certain causal combinations of self-energies actually have 1 over d minus 4 cancellations. So if you use dimensional regularization, and you have this 1 over d minus 4 divergences, and you can actually see that if you take these causal combinations, you can see these 1 over d minus 4 cancellations happening. So causal combinations can also give you divergency. You can kick out divergences. But there still should be divergences. I'm not going to claim by any means that this is going to cure the divergences in quantum field theory. It just might cure some divergences because you use these causal propagators. But this is a minor practical thing. For me, it was more of an aesthetic reason that you really can see that nothing travels outside of the light cone.
You said that the two frameworks are completely equivalent, so how can you kill divergences in this new framework?
So in the end, it's completely equivalent. But in the meantime, so once you compute scattering amplitudes, you compute the positive frequency part of the wave function, but there might be cancellations coming from the other side, as you can see from the causality. So while the positive frequency part of the wave function had correlations outside of the light cone, but the probability itself didn't. So it does not have any correlations outside of the light cone. And so it comes from the complex conjugate parts of, so you compute amplitudes. So it comes from the complex conjugate part of the amplitudes. So there are cancellations.
But then you could say that the reverse can happen also. You could generate new divergences with this causal stuff.
That could happen, I don't know. I cannot guarantee.
You are saying that certain types of renormalization are not really necessary.
Certain diagrams might not have to be renormalized.
No, but the divergences in quantum field, they come in momentum space from power characters. The momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't see that power carry is going to be any different because you use these properties.
No, but I'm telling you that there are some combinations. So exactly, so there are these divergences there. But in formalism, this happens if you have plus-plus self-energies, which are standard in-out Feynman self-energies, and plus-minus self-energies, which are Whiteman-like self-energies, so non-time ordered ones. And to get the retarded self-energy, you have to add these two, and you can see that they're exactly cancel
So the one of them has the 1 over d minus 4, and the one has the 1 minus 1 over d minus 4. So there's still, because of power counting, there are these divergences, but there's just because of the sign in front of these divergences is the opposite, and that's why you get some cancellation.
You will know the truth when you calculate the lamp shift.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that what you're doing is, in addition to what we discussed before, trying to get conceptually more causal, that what you're doing is you're taking the Feynman, the perturbation series, and you're summing it together in a way that manifestly shows cancellations that were not visible before.
Exactly.
Okay, so you may still have divergences.
Yes, I will.
But what you're hoping is that certain terms will manifestly cancel
exactly.
at the term-by-term level.
Exactly.
Instead
exactly.
of you have all this extra crap and it cancels this.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping.
Okay.
But this is optimistic thinking, and I don't want to claim anything that I...
Right, but that's the motivation.
That's the motivation,
right, so,
yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So, it seems to me, in a certain minor sense, you haven't, you really don't have causal perturbation theory yet, because you have half retarded, half advanced. So the advanced Green's function is anti-causal.
No.
Now maybe you could I said minor because maybe you can just rewrite it, right, in such a way that it looks like.
No, but
this
is still causal. So I find this a slight misconception usually that people call the advanced propagation using the advanced propagator non-causal or anti-causal.
Yeah.
It's just a consequence of using in-out boundary conditions. So you have anti-causal things in the sense.
Well, suppose you're doing this in thing. Will you just be able to get by with just the retarded propagator or not the advanced?
You can actually form it just using the retarded propagator. But that's just, it's the difference between, if you take standard quantum field theory and scattering theory, if you do the Dyson series, you have integrations over T, and you have a nested series over time integration. So if you take this nested series and you don't time order this thing, then you will actually only get these retarded contributions. But if you make all these integrals run from 0 to t, so have them all the same time interval, and time order the Hamiltonians in the Dyson series, then you will get the Feynman time order propagators. So this is exactly the difference. So I could also not do this. And this is actually the standard choice that people do in the ENN formalism, is to not do this and have only these retarded propagators. But to make it symmetric in time, you do this time ordering of the Hamiltonians, which is another just rewriting, right? It's nothing.
So no, it really could be written just in terms of the
yes.
retarded propagators.
Yes, definitely.
Well, after asking you 200 questions.
Yes, let's thank again. Thank you.